This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In the Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
All right, good evening, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Eating Disorder. My name is Paul Gerard. Please welcome my co-host, Crazy Legs Conti.
Honored to be here, even with that musical mishap intro.
Musical, it was a little bit of the Temptations.
It was a Temptations?
I think so.
Oh, that's good.
If we're playing Name That Tune.
All right.
And the Reverend Spiro.
What's up? I gotta call out the bad day table. This is a good one. Okay, come on, Paul, let's call this one. Everybody, let's call this one. My man over here, he's got the Staten Island tan, the product in his hair.
Oof.
All right.
He just sneezed into his fist,
yes,
too.
Yes, he did. The semi-expensive
all over his
watch.
Def Leppard t-shirt.
And a Def Leppard t-shirt I'm sure he actually bought at the parking lot, at the show, at the Meadowlands.
81,
yes,
I'm saying.
Pretty much.
But that's not a first date table. I think that's an old date table.
Yeah, it's an old date table.
They're not talking. One's staring at their phone.
Yeah, they're in a new place, but they could care less because
they do seem incredibly bored.
Yes, because life is a vapid void of
yes,
nothing.
which brings us to our lovely topic of death, dead men walking, death, dying, and dinner.
Yeah.
We'll discuss our last meals. I was looking on the interwebs today, and I noticed that there are 56 million deaths per year, around 150,000 and change every day.
Wow, that's pretty depressing.
Yeah, that's a lot, right?
Yeah.
Yet not as bad as our debt here in the country. It's
only, I think only six, though, from swallowing the cheese cubes with the toothpick still in them.
Exactly.
So that number's down.
That's in the Darwin Awards.
Yeah, and we can do our part to prevent that. Just take the toothpicks out of the cheese cubes. Yeah.
Absolutely. But it's interesting because there's been very little change in our approach to The Greatest Adventure. It's a one-size-fits-all, everyone in black, standard churchy gloom fest. But that is all changing thanks to our guest today, who has been called by Refinery29 the Mary Poppins of death.
Hello.
Please welcome Louise De Winter.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you for being here. So, the Mary Poppins of death. So you're a funeral planner. You're not a mortician.
I'm absolutely not a mortician. I don't come across any dead bodies whatsoever. When I went into this, I was adamant. Dead bodies were something I was kind of not horrified by, but not interested in. The focus I have is on turning death into a bit of a party.
Dating finance guys.
Well, interesting you're talking about dating. Oh. I had a guy recently discovered what I did, and that was it.
Oh,
really? That was the end of that. Yeah.
He died. Is that what you mean? Oh, so it worked out for you. You got dinner?
A lot of people get freaked out by that. I guess people in general are freaked out by death, right?
Absolutely. And it says so much about people's own relationship with death as to how they react to me. So this guy seemed great. We were getting on really well, going for dinner, you know. And then he said, so where did you go last night? And I said, well, I was at this thing called a death cafe. And his response was, well, you know, I know all the bars and pubs around here. This is London. And I haven't heard of death cafe. You know, which pub is that? And I explained to him it's not a pub. It's a concept. It's a place where people gather to drink tea, eat cake, and talk about death. And he quizzed me on it for about 3 hours. He was fascinated.
3 hours
of questions, quite intense questions about my relationship with death and why I was doing it.
I would think
went
that was
away.
A good sign.
Well, no, then he went away. I got silence for 3 hours. And then he came back and said, you're too much. This is too intense. This is not for me. I'm a happy-go-lucky guy. I don't want to think about this stuff. I'm done.
What a pussy.
Wow.
I read here it says a report from last year's Cooperative Funeral Care, Britain's largest funeral provider, with 850 funeral homes, concluded that more than half of the country's funerals are now, quote, a celebration of life. But you disagree with the status quo of the British and the American funerals and the way they're held.
Well, it depends how you define a celebration of life. I've just spent a summer watching funerals in a crematorium. a great thing to do with your summer in England.
Mm. Who wouldn't want to date you? That sounds awesome.
Well, most of the guys with the black, you know, nail polish and lipstick.
Exactly.
Or, you know, yeah, basically us in high school.
Just get some goth. Yeah.
Do you get a plus one at the crematorium during the summer hours? Off season?
Oh yeah, I've taken a few people to the crematorium.
Not a euphemism.
Yeah, so I've watched so many funerals, and even the ones that are technically called a celebration of life, which are usually in the UK done by civil celebrants, people whose religious beliefs do not affect the funeral, still not really seeing them as a celebration of life. The content of the service might be different. The songs might be more upbeat. What they're talking about, you might get a sense of the person more than you would of the religious funeral. But it's still in a depressing crematorium. Everyone is still wearing black.
There's no disco ball.
There's no disco ball.
I was just thinking that. Like, what do you do to spice up a crematorium?
Don't use a crematorium. Yeah. Go somewhere else.
Great idea. I had a friend named Cal. He passed on 5-6 years ago. We did his memorial in the theater because he was very dramatic and he loved performance art and he loved poetry and all this stuff. And he didn't have much family, and there wasn't like a formal ceremony, and he was cremated. That was his only thing in his will. But when the one thing he left in his will, he goes, "Do not have a wake. Do not have a funeral. I want you to have a big fat party." Mm-hmm. You know, and that was fantastic.
That sounds mm-hmm. pretty good to me.
It was fantastic. We all kind of. It's funny because he had a thing about pink. All right, he was obsessed with the color pink. It's not like he wore it or whatever, but he had this weird conspiracy theory about it, and we all brought something pink. No one even put it out there. Like, no one even said, like, oh, remember, he had this thing. Everybody just remembered. And big party. It was awesome.
There's a line in Moonstruck where Johnny Camerari says, "One day you'll understand," and Cher says to him, "And one day I'll come to your funeral in a red dress." I always thought that was pretty awesome. I would love to have all my ex-girlfriends show up in a red dress.
probably many red dresses. Not the same one.
Your ex-wife would wear tie-dye.
So, Luis, you are changing this notion of basically custom funerals, making them truly a celebration of life. Is that the end goal?
Doesn't always have to be a celebration of life, and that's not what I'm trying to do. Okay. All I'm trying to do is make people aware that there are other options which aren't the standard tick box ones. So many people, when someone close to them dies or in shock, grief, the first thing you do is call the funeral home and get the body out the door as quickly as possible, and then pay what is, I think the average is $8,000 in the US to have a very standard funeral with a coffin in either a cemetery or a crematorium.
In many cases, people pay for their plots in advance years before.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's not the case. I was so shocked when I started looking into this at the number of amazing options that are out there and the number of people who are starting to do something really interesting, which is not one of those things. And you can have so much more freedom. All the crematorium services I've seen this summer have been limited to 40 minutes max. And, it's very much one in, one out. One coffin looks very similar to the next one. You know, that hysterical grief that I witnessed from the wife whose husband had dropped dead at 40 is exactly the same hysterical grief of, right. The daughter at the next funeral.
Right.
It all becomes a conveyor belt.
How can you, what can you do as the planner to help with the grief? Is that part of one of the things you want to do, is to address the family in a different way so that they're not in such a gloomy situation?
Yes and no. My job is not as a grief counsellor, and I absolutely cannot take away anyone's pain. But the process of a funeral, and what I've had to really question this summer is, what is a funeral? What purpose does it serve? And the answer I've landed on is that it's a ritual to make the process of grief more bearable and to acknowledge the loss of whoever it is and be able to deal with it.
And I agree with you. I think one of the problems, though, is that it's become... Basically, it's about like legacy and it's like traditionally mechanical. So, in other words, the process that we have gone through for years has not caught up with us.
Yeah.
Because to one level or another, it's like, okay, the whole wake thing, I don't get it anymore. I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't want anybody looking at me like that. Like the way I saw my dad, I don't want anybody looking at me going, that plastic thing.
He looks good. He looks good.
His cheeks are rosy.
Yeah.
You think that bottle of tequila next to him is full? Or Luis, did in your summer at the crematoriums, some vision of mine thinks like in your off day, you'd go to like a Viking funeral. Have you ever witnessed
That's what I
Viking
wanted to
funerals?
Do. That's what I was saying to her. You know, where you set the ship out, yeah. and then you hit it with a flaming arrow when it's about a quarter of a mile out, and the whole thing...
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
because that sounds pretty awesome to me.
That's
I wouldn't
so
know.
Easy. There'd be like 15 arrows going out. People go like, "Oh, you missed again! Oh my god!"
you told me that the burials at sea are very limited in the UK, right?
Yeah, it's very hard to get a burial at sea in the UK. There are only 20 of them a year, and they are very specific. Mm. There are three places where you can do them, and you have to use very specific funeral homes who are licensed to do it. You have to use a specific captain on the ship, a specific kind of coffin, and there have been so many incidents of coffins that haven't been weighted properly and haven't sunk, then, you know, arriving on shore. And
yeah, we had that problem in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I was going to say, they've mastered that in Brooklyn.
That was good.
Yeah. You go to Vinnie Bombat's funeral home, he'll make sure it's weighted
the
properly.
The problem was they weren't funerals, yeah.
Well, they used, instead of wood, they used cement. What are there other interesting funeral or scenarios that you've seen?
Funerary?
Absolutely. Well, it's difficult to get invited to the unusual ones. It's a party that's got an exclusive guest list. It's very easy to see the very boring crematorium ones where you can observe from the back and just see quite bog standard funerals. For people who, I think the way you die is reflected by the way you've lived. And I learned so much about the way people were living by the people who were showing up at their funerals and so on. Yeah. But in terms of interesting funerals, the UK is much more out there than the US. The US
really?
Is... quite stringent. There are so many laws and lobbyists, and it's obviously in the interest of the funeral homes to keep it that way. The UK is much freer. We've had a movement since the 80s called the Natural Death Movement, and we have a brilliant organization that enables people to make whatever they want, you know, whatever their funeral is, they'll help them make it happen.
So hot air balloons or...
Hot air balloons, you know, natural... We have a lot of natural burial grounds.
Okay.
We have meadows. We have, you know, they're all farmed by horses. There's a big movement for organic eco-funerals, moving away from crematoriums because it does such damage to the environment, moving to go back towards burials with no chemicals, no embalming... You know, everything, even coffins, just very simple coffins
that cost
a couple of £100 as opposed to, you know, £8,000.
Yeah, I spoke to somebody the other day who was talking about, and this is weird that this comes up now, but they're talking about salting the bodies and doing what they did with them, you know, mummifying, basically.
Yeah.
You know, drying all the fluid out of any particular corpse, and then it just... is basically
it's jerky.
I was
getting hungry.
You're jerky for life.
Speaking of which, I saw this thing called endocannibalism. It's a practice of eating the flesh or people that are in the same community right after they died. And I thought that maybe you and I could team up on something. I can come up with some delicious human recipes, and we could bring endocannibalism to the United States, kind of shake it up a little bit.
Absolutely, and in some cultures, it's tradition to drink the ashes of your loved one, so that's a good idea for a cocktail bar.
And
the rumor was that Keith Richards snorted his.
Yeah, Keith Richards, exactly.
So ashes are not environmentally friendly, because everything you described that was people, like, for instance, Timothy Leary's ashes will be spread by Susan Sarandon at Burning Man, or that great scene in The Big Lebowski, but it sounds like ashes may not be the freedom... that we've grown accustomed to in terms of where someone wants to lie.
No, absolutely not, especially the amount of fuel that has to go into burning the body in the coffin. Those coffins, you know, cost thousands of pounds.
Oh.
All of that wood and all of the special material that goes into it, and then it's just burnt. It lasts, a day, and then it's gone.
Wow.
And I'd imagine in crematoriums, they probably don't talk about it, but there's a fair amount of a percentage of commingling. Do they sweep out the... last person's like little bits and then the next person's
like a litter box. They have this like shake, this thing that shakes back and forth, and everything just kind of falls through.
Is that how it works?
Yeah. I put a bunch of cats in there to kick backwards.
Because you've already paid for the lot to be next to your loved one who probably hated you for the rest of eternity, but then you're stuck with the person behind you in the crematorium line regardless. Does commingling, is that a thing?
Yeah, that has happened. There's been a lot of controversy over the last few years of crematoriums who are too busy and they have burnt bodies at the same time, and then ashes have got kind of mingled.
And so the, you know, the Rastafarian, the vegan, and the finance guy just become this chimera of dead, you know?
They said it was only as short time ago as 1930 that open-air funeral pyres became illegal in the UK. In 1930.
Yeah.
That seems like a very short time to be... having open air funeral piles, like, you know, just go ahead, set them up.
bring the marshmallows.
It's amazing how quickly change happens. When crematoriums were first introduced, Britain was fuming. People were going crazy and trying to shut them down. It was, you know, you will burn in hell if you go to a crematorium. And now
it's
the norm.
That's two burning puns you just used in that sentence. The fuming and burn in hell.
Okay.
So what is the Death Cafe? Tell us a little bit about that.
So Death Cafe is a movement that was set up in the UK a couple of years ago now. It was a friend of mine called John Underwood who realized that in the job he was doing, if people could just talk about death and acknowledge that as a fact, so much of the nonsense that was going on would just disappear. So he invited a few people over to have a conversation about death and dying. And that grew from one conversation to a movement. And we've now had, 2,000 death cafes all around the world. Anyone can host a death cafe. It's just a gathering of people who drink tea, eat cake, and talk about death.
So you talk about it from a point of what you're afraid of and the approaching of death, or just everything to do with death, your mother's death, your own death, or whatever it is.
It's completely free. There is no agenda whatsoever. So anyone can bring whatever it is. I've seen people who are absolutely petrified of dying. I've seen people who've just lost a loved one. I've seen people who do it from an artistic point of view because they're doing a project about death. And just people like me who have always been fascinated by it.
And
technically, Underwood would be your third death pun, but yes. What age did you become fascinated by death?
Three. At age three, I was fascinated by death. I used to, I term it now as the black hole of existence. I would stare into the black hole, and I was never frightened by death. I sort of have battled with depression most of my life, and ultimately, instead of running away from death and trying to pretend it wasn't happening, I found that by embracing it, I got to live.
So how would you want your own funeral to be?
Simple and beautiful. So I'd want to be buried. I used to want to be cremated, but since I watched all of those crematoriums, I'm absolutely not to go to a crematorium. If my mother's listening, do not send me to a crematorium. I would want to go to a beautiful English wild meadow and be buried in a very simple cotton dress and just left alone.
Wow. How about you, Crazy
You know,
Legs?
Luis, you've changed my mind just now in that moment. My buddy is Zoroastrian, and I didn't want to go like him, which is they've since sort of outlawed it. They have a giant temple or a... not even a temple, like a silo, when the bodies go in. The problem was vultures were taking body parts and dropping them. But I had always assumed I would get cremated. Chef Paul's from, or spent a lot of time in New Orleans, and I would take it just a small amount in the ceremony where it goes in the river. But that my dad has a house in Maine, and there was a specific spot that I thought that's where my ashes should go. But now I realize maybe my body goes there, and that would be good. And my stomach, of course, as a competitive eater, donated to the Smithsonian. But no, I would go burial now. Thanks.
It's interesting that the two of you think that you're going to go before your parents.
I might go in the next 15 minutes. I might not even make it to the next the second.
I was wondering why you were grabbing your arm.
I was like, I better write this down.
How about you, Spiro?
The bronzed made of
bronze. Yeah, the Han Solo way.
Nah,
that's carbonite.
No. More think Greek, you know, weird, fictional, mythological animal with a huge penis that becomes a hat rack.
Wow. Wait,
so, but can an actual, I know they have the bodies exhibit, Luis, could somebody become a statue and their body encased in the statue?
Hat rack specifically.
Absolutely. If that's what you want to do, I'm
really?
Sure someone will make
sure
it happen.
Somebody's
going
to have something to say about
life,
that.
Life just got a little better knowing that. I'm not even kidding. That's amazing.
So let's talk about this. This is a food centric show. Let's talk about last meals. We had an interesting conversation over the last meal we just had, actually, about
more puns.
about different restrictions on last meals in the penal system in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So I've been looking into it. It's amazing. I didn't realize the number of regulations and guidelines around what prisoners can have as their final meal. So Texas has just banned all last meals.
Well, I want to talk about that, but let's get back to it. I definitely want to talk about why that happened.
They die hungry?
Let's talk about it now, because the guy ordered too much food, right?
Yeah,
this is what he ordered.
You
ready?
Much.
Hold on. Right. Here it is. He ordered, I take my glasses off to read this, 2 chicken fried steaks smothered in gravy with sliced onions, a triple meat bacon cheeseburger with fixings on the side, a cheese omelet with ground beef, tomatoes, onions, bell peppers, and jalapenos, a large bowl of fried okra with ketchup, which that's where I would start questioning him, at the okra.
Because of the ketchup.
It's delicious. Because of the ketchup, you would have had remoulade.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. 1 pound of barbecue with a half a loaf of white bread, 3 fajitas with fixings, a meat lover's pizza, 3 root beers, 1 pint of Bluebell vanilla ice cream, and a slab of peanut butter fudge with crushed peanuts.
He believed in the afterlife because he wasn't going to finish that. He was just like, hey, wrap it up. I'll take it to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, no. What he did is he denied it when they gave it to him.
Yeah, he didn't eat anything.
Yeah, so then, I'm just fucking with you. Mm.
But now he ruined it for the rest
of
the class.
Mm. Exactly.
Yeah.
He did. That one guy. It's always that one guy.
So Texas State, you can't get a last meal.
No more. Because of that guy.
That one guy.
And in Florida, you can order from a local restaurant, providing the bill doesn't come to more than $40.
Wow.
Do you know what the most popular choice of food is for a final meal?
Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Mm-hmm.
No?
Mm-hmm.
In Florida or overall?
Overall.
I'm going to guess ice cream.
Mm-mm.
Oh. Spam?
Chef Paul?
Oh, I know the answer.
Oh,
he's cheating.
Oh. Yeah.
What is it?
Cheeseburger.
I thought it was fried chicken.
Yeah, having a lot of... I know you can go, and you obviously have some experience researching this, of famous death row inmates and their last meals and trying to recreate this. I guess you had some blowback, so to speak, in an event. Is that true? There's been...
No, that wasn't my event. That was some guys in London who decided to hold a celebration of prisoners' last meals.
Oh, okay.
And the event was closed down before it even happened.
Really?
There was such uproar. People were so angry and disgusted about the idea of it that was it.
So they were going to serve the last meals that had been requested.
Yeah.
And it had advertised with the mugshot or the photo of the death row inmate and then the meal that they were going to serve.
It is pretty
Do we think in America that would fly? I mean, we have mob tours where people are hit off or bumped off. I mean,
exactly.
You know? Do you think America would have that death row supper club and it would be fine, or would there be an outcry here?
I think it's about timing, but anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think there'd be an outcry here, too. Mm. People are just frightened of death.
Yeah, but the day before Halloween, everybody would have thought it was a great idea. You know,
exactly.
It is context. It's like, oh, it's before Halloween. I'm allowed to talk about death now, you know?
Right. As long as you're in a slutty murder outfit.
Yes. Yeah.
So what would your last meal be?
Oh, I have agonized over this.
Ooh.
Absolutely agonized over it. And the answer I came to was really simple. It was just hot tea and buttered toast. Because my whole philosophy on the reason I'm doing
and toast is very trendy right now, but go ahead. She thinks I'm kidding.
I even went to a toast party the last
time. Ah, see?
Toast and topping.
I'm guessing she didn't pick it because it was trendy.
I picked it because my grandma used to serve it. No. Buttered on both sides. And the idea being that if it's my last meal, hopefully I've lived a full life and enjoyed all the meals I want to enjoy anyway. So in that final moment, if I could just have the warming sensation of holding a cup of tea and having some buttered toast, I'd be good.
And that's not a death row meal. That's like you on your deathbed meal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a much nicer thing.
death row meal.
You know what? You order spoiled shrimp, so you get sick. Because if you get sick, they have to postpone it. It's true. They can't kill you sick.
Didn't you tell me there was one where they said they restricted caloric intake or something? Somebody ordered something and they said the calories are too high?
Oh, yeah, it was bad for them.
Cholesterol's
good. Yeah, I think that was a knock-on effect from the guy in Texas.
Oh, okay.
The calorie intake for that was pretty horrific.
So we did like a little research, which means barely any. And one of the things that we discovered... on Wikipedia was that the tradition of the last meal comes from Europe, and it was kind of set up it was kind of a superstitious thing. It was so that you wouldn't come back and haunt me. Like, I gave you your last thing. And see, now, if I'd known that in Europe, I would have been like, screw you. Whether I believed it or not, I'd be like, now that I'm coming back.
No,
I'm
redemption at the end, Spiro? No,
I'm haunting you. I'm haunting your grandma. I'm haunting you three generations back.
You'll be haunting
back.
Heritage Radio.
I've seen you eat. If you had the choice, you would take the meal.
Yeah, do you have a choice? Do you have a last meal?
Not if you're going to kill me.
So what would your last meal be?
Oh, a big bucket of heroin.
I think you have to have it spread on chicken or something.
It's poppies. Yeah. I mean, come on, it's food.
I don't know. How about you, Crazy Legs? Well, I know you put some thought into
Luis
this.
Luis almost made me change again, because the story my mom tells me of my birth is I had toast crumbs on my head because she was so hungry. But I'm a product of divorce, so I was actually going to choose my dad's strawberry rhubarb pie, much to my mother's chagrin. But I would like to do oysters. I feel oysters are something I'm connected to, and then Maine lobster and corn on the cob, and then the strawberry rhubarb pie. But I don't know if that's my last.
You passed your $40.
Is that more? Well,
you passed your.
I can get it delivered in Cornish, Maine. No, if it's in Maine, if I get arrested in Bridgeton or Keyser Falls.
And you know the problem with these death row meals is that in most cases they're prepared in the prison kitchen. So you may request the most amazing, and it's not exactly Gordon Ramsay that's cooking it.
But again, like you, this is your last meal.
Oh, no,
this
I thought it was a death row meal.
Oh, it's a death row meal.
I don't want to announce what I'm going to do, but I definitely, I would have assumed, that was my death row meal. But I guess that would be my death bed meal as well. Maybe my death bed meal would just be one single oyster, I guess.
See, I had to go with clams. I had to go with like clams oregano or something, like something I grew up eating.
Childhood, reminiscent of your birth, which maybe you don't remember.
I was born in a clam bed in Coney Island.
I was born
in Randazzo's. Right.
I want to do a shout out to Greg, the day manager at Pioneer Bar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
29th Street.
Across the street from where I work. I actually asked him earlier today. I'd forgotten about this. And I was like, well, what would your last meal be? This is a good one. He has celiac. He goes, pizza. You know, spaghetti, a loaf of good bread. It was anything I can't eat right now. I was like, that's not bad.
A bowl of gluten and a spoon.
Yeah. There you go. All right. I had a bowl of gluten for dinner the other night.
Really?
Mock duck. Yeah. Love it.
Mock duck is gluten. Yeah.
So
it's good, though.
Part of, Louis, the notion of celebrating this last meal or all of these ways that we've talked about going, how does that all incorporate into what you are trying to do to change death entirely? Because I like your notion, so I'm in if you need me to hold a placard or do something. But what would be the overall? How does it all work?
How are you going to make it disruptive? That's what the kids like to say these days. It's got to be disruptive.
All right.
I'm becoming known as the girl who is disrupting death.
Oh wow!
It's just about giving people the option. And it's not about what I want death to be or how my funeral will be. It's about how do you want to live and how do you want to die? And don't allow a funeral director to tell you what that's going to be and what that's going to cost. Do it your way. And all I'm doing is facilitating that process.
That's good. I have my buddy, Mr. Kowitz, Josh Ozersky, passed away suddenly. Mm. He was actually supposed to be a guest on our show. And I got an email from a friend of his I didn't know who said, we're going to assemble. He was a writer and a food guy. Just write your story about Josh, no matter how obscene, perverse, wonderful. We're going to have this gathering, and we're just going to read the stories and try to make it not be about, like, hey, we're sad he's gone, but we were glad that he lived, and really, he lived his life in excess. He's the first person I knew had gout, and he celebrated that he had gout. He had an event, Meatopia, where he would inject fat in a syringe into pork, so he had fat pork injected fat pork or something. So I know that'll be served there. So I feel like a lot of my friends, and little Jimmy, who was a guest on our show, passed away at Coney Island. He was on the laminate placards, and they did this ceremony, which in the PR world probably, you know, as a great man has fallen, they parade his hat around Brooklyn in a paladin. And they did that, and then his
sister little Jimmy.
Sang, for little Jimmy, and his sister sang Ave Maria. Now, this is all preceding a hot dog eating contest. So the notion of, like, this is little Uncle Sam, and we're going to show his, the hat is going to make the final round. And there was a New Orleans funeral dirge, and he'd never been to New Orleans. But it was all those traditional things of death turned on their head mm-hmm. in a wonderful, bizarre way that little Jimmy would have been like, yeah, that's the, you know, I'm glad. I'm glad that went down that way. So
yeah, I wouldn't want the standard thing. I was actually talking to my mother about it recently, and I asked her how she feels about it, because she's getting up there, and she said I'm not afraid of death at all. She said the only thing that bothers me is the pain that the people I leave behind is going to feel.
Mm. You know what my mother said? Why are you talking about
she
these
said,
things?
Spiro, shut up.
Why are you talking about these things? These are nice, not nice, these things. Talk about nice. What are you doing? Where you got married?
Talk about nice.
Talk about nice. But it sounds like, Louise, people can reach out to you because you can present options that they may not have thought of. Is that the case? Or
absolutely.
And how do people get a hold of you before they shake their mortal coil? Yeah.
Well, they can go along to my website, louise-de-winter.com, and get in touch with me there. But, you know, it doesn't have to be a funeral that's planned by your family after it's happened. What I want to introduce is the idea that it's your final gift to your family. If you know you're going to go, if you've got cancer, you've got a terminal diagnosis, then why not arrange it all ahead of time? And not in the pre-planned funeral way that we're so familiar with at the moment, where you're giving thousands of dollars to a funeral director, but plan the ultimate party. I love surprising and delighting people. It's one of my favorite things to do, working out who they are and what will give them joy. And that's what I want to do with funerals as well. So I'm going to call my company Poetic Endings.
Ah, okay.
Very nice.
Better than Poetic Justice, because that's what I deserve.
And Louise, is there anything that you would like to say as we wrap up this gloomy episode of Eating Disorder?
I feel great. I feel great.
I'm just kidding. He actually did.
You
definitely breathed some life into the Dead Man Walking show.
Yes.
Well, the only thing I want to say is exactly what you just said. Death doesn't have to be gloomy. Death is inevitable, but it doesn't have to be gloomy, and you can do it with such life. And the more I've embraced it, the more I've got to live, so it's been a wonderful thing.
You should live every day like it's your last, right?
Absolutely.
So when is the next Death Cafe?
The next Death Cafe is going to be on Tuesday the 11th of August, and that will be held at the Morbid Anatomy Museum
in Brooklyn.
Everyone is very welcome to come along and experience the exhilaration of talking about what it's like to
and
die.
And we will repost it. Woo-hoo! So you know. Excellent. On our page.
I hope I can fantastic. Make it till then. I was thinking about chugging this thing of hot sauce in front of me.
Gentlemen, any last requests?
Yeah, extra cheese, bitch.
I hope I can make it to next week's closing season show. I may have to bartend, which would be tragic, but I'd like to be here for Eating Disorders.
He's not going to be able to make the porn show.
Yeah.
It'll be the death of me.
That's too bad.
But we'll see. I'll have to juggle
the porn stars by myself.
You can bring them by the bar afterwards. But, Louise, thank you so much. You may be the only guest in Eating Disorder history since I've been a co-host.
That wasn't spoken over.
Yes, that's true. But that it changed my mind based on everything you said.
Mary Poppins of Death. There you go.
Right. There you go. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Good night, everyone.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.